A little over a year ago, probably a little more than that now, in April, I remember I did a thing. I'm part of the Board of Education at our church, and I do educational type things. And so we thought it was appropriate that we do something about AIDS, and a doctor in our congregation did a session on the medical aspects of AIDS, and I did a session the next week on the church's responsibility towards persons with AIDS. Within about a week, I think, after that, I had a telephone call from a pastor who heard I had done that, a pastor of another church, and he wanted to know if I would be willing to help in the community with a group of people who were getting together to try to find some answers to the problem of AIDS in the community. I could hardly say no, having just given the presentation that day. And so I went for a while. We kind of met together as a group of people who cared, and we informed each other, and we brought materials and shared them with each other. We really didn't do a lot, anything hands-on, anything actual. We were probably, I guess you could say, in the process of being educated. And then all of a sudden, one of the pastors in the group came one day, and he said that Sunday, the previous Sunday, as he left church, a man had come, as he was standing at church, and a man had come up to him and he said, "I'm sick, I have AIDS, can you help me?" And his question then to us was, "Can we help this person?" Well, it's one thing to talk about AIDS in theory, it's another thing when you get down to the nitty-gritty. I can say all I want at first, that I believe everything that's being said, that AIDS cannot be contacted through casual contact, etc. But the first time we had a meeting where the man with AIDS attended, and we all shook hands with him, I will quite honestly tell you that hard time knowing what to do with my hand thereafter, because I wasn't too sure that I might just put it up to my mouth, and that might be dangerous. Well, it took me a little while to conquer some of my own affairs. And I say that because I think that's very important, that we know we are fearful people. Sometime down the road from there, I felt very good when we had a medical doctor talk to us who worked specifically with persons with AIDS. And one of the things he told us that night was about examining patients. And he said he was examining this one patient, and the patient had a lifesaver in his mouth. And the doctor said, "What is the flavor of that lifesaver? What kind of lifesaver is that?" And the man said, "Well, it's butterscotch." And the doctor said, "Oh, my favorite kind." And the guy reached into his pocket and he held out his lifesavers and offered one to the doctor. And the doctor had to take that lifesaver and put it in his mouth. And that's a different experience, because you are now eating something, all right? And he said it was at that point that he crossed his fear barrier. I would say all of us have a fear barrier. And we need to recognize that we have a fear barrier. And one of the ways we conquer our fear barriers or pass through them is to talk about them, be honest about them. Say, "This is what I'm afraid of. This is what I think might happen." I will tell you one other thing briefly on this list, and then I'm going to move on just so that you know where I have been. In the fall, I think it was, of that first year, and it was after our first person with AIDS had died, that we decided that it would be helpful to let the community know we existed. Up to then, we'd been kind of private. Nobody was running around shouting from the housetops, "Here we are," and then how do we help people if we don't let people know that here we are? So we did something we later learned many places won't touch with a 10-foot pole. But we had one guy in our group who was a reporter for the newspaper, and we asked Mark if he would do a series of articles about what we were doing about AIDS in particular. He talked this over with a couple of his editors. What they came up with, the first story was about, by then we had other people involved, was about the parents of a young man who had died in California but the family lived in our city, and that happens to be Battle Creek, Michigan. And they had, up until that time, not wanted to be known in the community, but they agreed to have a story done in the local newspaper about themselves, and you can imagine what a fear barrier they crossed to be willing to allow that to happen. The second story was about our organization, which we call BC Cares. I have some brochures, yeah, that stands for Battle Creek Community AIDS Resource and Education Services, but it basically means that Battle Creek cares. But the second article was about that. The third article was about a young man who by then was part of the group who had AIDS, and about some of the struggles that he was experiencing. And the fourth article was about a man who agreed to be identified as a gay male and who talked about, was interviewed about what it was like to live as a gay person in today's society. This series was very well done, but I was very frightened. I wondered what this series was going to mean for me, for my husband, for our congregation, for my family. There's been a lot of discrimination against people with AIDS. There's also been a lot of discrimination against people who work with AIDS, with people who have AIDS. And I think all of us in the group, we didn't talk about it a lot until later, but all of us identified a lot of fears that we had about this series. And the joy for us was the very beautiful response that we got from the community. The people whose son died, I think that whole afternoon got telephone calls of support. They had no negative phone calls, which was a real delight. We have heard since that in other communities that could never have happened. So I'm kind of proud of our community. There were two negative letters sent to the newspaper, both of them by pastors. But other than that, that was the only negative response that I was aware of in the community. But again, there was another fear barrier that we had to work our way through. It was after that we made our brochures and we distributed them all over town, etc. Now it's very, very, I don't know. We have been very blessed, I think, in not having a problem. But in other places, it is a problem. Conference I attended in the Chicago area not long ago, I heard from several of the speakers about AIDS that there was no way you could advertise your existence. So it was very difficult to help people with AIDS because you couldn't let people know where you were and who you were. We advertise our meeting place. We meet four times a month. We invite the general public, and so far everything has been. But now that's all I'm going to tell you for now, because if I keep talking, you're not going to talk. And it is my contention that we learn about things like this when we begin to learn about ourselves in this context. And I hope as you went through the paper that you learned some things about yourself. Or at least you maybe have to struggle with some of these questions. Some of the questions may have been hard for you. That's good, because I think it's at the point of struggle that we begin to learn and grow. Let me also throw this out. Statistically, as I understand it, probably about 1 out of 10 people is either gay or lesbian. We think of, and sadly that's not the case so much anymore, but we think of AIDS as a gay disease because it began in the gay community. It did not come into this country through the great gay community, and around the country, around the world rather, it is more of a heterosexual disease than it is here in the United States. But the gay community is the one largely affected initially, and the one still with the highest percentage of persons with AIDS. But we watch the monthly statistics, and we are seeing each month the health department comes up with these, and they're all broken down into categories. And what we're seeing is a beginning, a downturn from the gay males. in an upturn in the heterosexual population, and an upturn primarily within because, well, there's two reasons for that. One is the IV drug abuse, which is a good way to spread AIDS, and the other is the heterosexual population believes they are safe, and they're not safe. And so there is an a problem. I think what I'd like to suggest is that you get together in groups of four, and you might try to avoid people that you know really well and work together with maybe some people you haven't met before, and feel free to share your thinking. If you're interested in pursuing this, is an excellent book. It is not available here. You can copy it down after a while, AIDS, The Spiritual Dilemma, by Johnny Fortunato. It will not only has some good things to say about AIDS, also about understanding for gay and lesbian population, but also I think I would recommend the book for anybody who has something to grieve about, because there are very good grief helps in here. I brought other books that are available in the bookstore, and I promise that I will mention those very quickly, so that you might take a look. The Denial of Death, this is general, this is not to do with AIDS. This is a rather weighty book that has goes through the psychology and the philosophy and so forth. But I think it's a very valuable book. You're dealing with a grief of any kind, I recommend C.S. Lewis's A Grief Observed, that is in the bookstore. It's a very honest expression of how he felt when his wife died. People with AIDS, of course, are dealing with a good deal of grief. Good Grief, which is written by a Lutheran pastor, very little inexpensive book, but it does talk about the things that happen to people who are grieving. You might want to take a look at that. One reservation I have about this book is it does identify all different stages. My own feeling, and I think that's coming today to be generally understood, that we unfortunately don't go through these stages in nice, neat little order. Just forget the stage part, but read the book. That book has value. Forget the stages. This is good. Meditations for the Terminally Ill and Their Families. There's a couple of devotions about AIDS in here, but there are about all kinds of terminal illnesses. I have one in here that has to do with the death of my father, and the Wounded Healer. Now, having done that, let's get back here. And over here, I heard that there was a question. And would you like to rephrase that or phrase it for us all?
Oh, if AIDS were not a disease transmitted by gay men, would the disease be a spiritual dilemma? If it were like any other sexually transmitted disease, maybe syphilis, you know, people used to die from syphilis before antibiotics, but it were not a spiritual dilemma. Why is AIDS a spiritual dilemma?
Why is AIDS a spiritual dilemma? Did somebody out here want to answer that or respond to that?
Like, we talked about that.
Go ahead.
And compared AIDS with syphilis. And I think what brought the alarm in this country was that AIDS was discovered here in the gay community. And that's why it became a sensational disease. A few years ago, if you had syphilis and it was known, you were a social pariah. We did find out that syphilis was in three stages, I believe it was, the third, the worst. We don't know how many stages exist for AIDS, or if there are stages.
Okay. So we have some things here about AIDS that are just a little bit different. It's a sexually transmitted disease like syphilis. We are combining things that people are generally dread talking about, death and sexuality. It isn't common to be talking about our sexuality. That's only very recently that we've been able to do that in an appropriate fashion. But here's a kind of sexuality in terms of the gay community that is different. People are different, and that's something we have not wanted to come to grips with. And we do have some spiritual stuff on both sides of that fence that we could offer. So that's one of the reasons. There is a fear with AIDS because AIDS, at first there was such a mystery in people, oh, you read all this stuff, I don't, that you could get it from saliva, you could get it if somebody blew at you, you're in the same room with somebody. And so, I mean, you knew syphilis didn't spread that way, but AIDS certainly must. And so that became us very, very frightening. How about the times of plagues, other times of plagues? And this is seen kind of as a plague. How do we respond to a plague? And in there's part of your spiritual journey. How do you respond to a plague, especially if responding to the plague might put you in danger? Right now, when we still have, and I, much as we have done, I think, very well in Battle Creek so far, in some places there's still a great deal of persecution going on. What does it mean to run the risk? I've got materials out here. One of the things we've learned about leaving materials for AIDS is that people don't like to pick them up because they don't like to be seen carrying away materials about AIDS. So I got very casual about that. I'm in a pile of books about AIDS sitting in the car, and I've forgotten. But there was a time when I was like that. Oh, well, let's put that one in my purse, and I'm not going to pull that one out on public transportation.
You were asking for was denial. We like sure. Feel that, you know,
that it doesn't new. Exist. That it doesn't exist, yes.
We had a question, too. Can you explain to us, historically or whatever, why the AIDS epidemic has affected, well, one, why it's affected the gay community in the United States and the heterosexual community in other parts of the world, and two, how it spread so quickly. From almost an unknown disease, I don't know, 10 years ago or whatever, maybe not even that.
Not even that, no.
Yeah, and to such huge epidemic.
Yeah. I am not as well versed in the medical aspects of it as I am on the compassion aspects. I have a mind that's kind of like a sieve, and I've read all this stuff, and it kind of dumps out again on the other side. I think my from what is still in there, and if somebody wants to correct me on this, just feel free to speak up. But at first, when it came into the United States, it was ignored. These things were happening. There's the book that is available in the library. It is traumatic reading, but if you want to know about that, and the band played on, this is the, actually a man from Michigan who did that story all about how, first this happened here, and then that happened there, and this happened out on that coast, and people simply didn't get together at first. Then when they began to get together and say, hey, something's going on here, and we've got to try and find out what's going on here, what was at the back of a lot of people's minds, well, it's happening in the gay community, and they don't matter. So there wasn't a lot of immediately jumping on the bandwagon and saying, hey, let's find out what's going on here. It's them, and you know, anytime you categorize a people and you say it's happening to them, I'm safe, then you don't have to do anything. You can go out there and ignore it. So that's one of the contentions. There are people who are very, very angry, and that's one of the responses on here with the United States government for not doing something a lot more quickly. The money that has been poured into it at this point in time has, I think, in the last half a dozen years, I think there's been an attempt to combat that, and there are a good many exciting discoveries being made. Somewhere I heard that they were now spending more money on AIDS than they are on cancer, and that makes people unhappy. But the other side of that coin is AIDS research has benefited other people with other diseases as well. So we're not only benefiting people with AIDS, but we're doing an awful lot of learning. That's not a real good answer for you. It's the best I can do.
there's theorizing on as to how it came to this country, and yes. You know, the green monkey in South Africa, and then mercenary soldiers that were from Jamaica who were in Africa functioning, and then the gay community in Jamaica, and then vacationing. A lot of gay people in this country vacationed down there, and then it spread and began to spread in some of the metropolitan areas where there were large numbers of gay people in New York and in San Francisco, Miami.
Well, and there's the story of the steward, an airline steward.
Who knew he had it and was spreading it, and there was someone like that who seemed to have some emotional, mental kinds of attitudes.
Well, made a point of being sure that he could give it to as many people as he could give it to.
But it also, by blood and semen and anal intercourse.
Say that again, because those are two important words to remember. When you're afraid about AIDS, blood and semen, and let's don't just quit with blood. Blood to blood and semen, all right? So in short, even if I would come in contact with the blood of an infected person, I'm not going to get AIDS unless that blood gets into my bloodstream. If I have a cut or what have you, it's blood to blood and semen. Those are important.
But anal intercourse is where you get blood to semen contact.
Yes, right.
It's very possible because of the function and shape of the cells, and a possible tearing, which is can be very minute, but happens, and so it gets started.
Speaking about what has the government done, or what have they done in different places, tell what about that, what you were telling us, Mr.
At one point, the agency I directed, we developed a program for street kids, which really meant street prostitutes, which expanded to the young males.
Mm-hmm.
We got a contract with the state health department to do some education on the streets.
Uh-huh.
And in contrast, to say something positive about our country, one morning I got a call from the BBC, who were traveling around the world to develop a film for a British broadcasting company showing about the ways in which countries responded to the AIDS crisis. And they had been down to Brazil, which they said was an example of how not. They were simply overwhelmed by it, and they had kind of given up. In Germany, they were relying mainly on law.
Mm-hmm.
And he came to the state of Minnesota because he felt we were handling it of the way it was being handled. We were doing rather well.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting. They wanted to do a film of our program. And this call came in the morning. They wanted to do this in the afternoon. And would I please find a cafe for them to film it in, where Gates probably gathered it. And our street worker was able, within a matter of hours, to get young street males to participate in that film. And the very first, I contacted our worker for suggestions as to which cafe to use. And the very first cafe that I called was willing to be the site of the film, which meant, while he got something from the BBC for using their facility, did mean a cut back in the number of customers he could serve. But it was fascinating to me to see that, but mainly the different responses which were being made throughout the world, the reliance on law, for instance, or just giving up very quickly.
Yes, or the shoving it under the rug. We don't have it. Until recently, the Soviet Union didn't confess that there was any AIDS in the Soviet Union.
That's right.
And
they never had any mental illnesses or anything either until lately. They wouldn't admit anything like that.
The reporting systems, again, of various countries is very interesting, because we really don't know how much AIDS there is because of the various reporting systems. Lady over here.
I was just going to say another factor in hearing so much about it in the last 10 years was the great rise of drug abuse.
Yes.
IV drug abuse.
The largest single group right now is the IV drug abuser. So we've got to do something about our drug problem. Beginning to deal with addicted people, with people who live only for the fix. All right. So how do you reach that population? And we are aware in our small organization that we don't even know how to reach them. Somebody in my group put it well before you. When you encounter some of these things, you you kind of bumble around for a while, and I would say that's basically very true. It's certainly true of the organization I'm part of, where we do some of this bumbling around as we try to find a route. Yes.
Another thing too, you know, there were, I don't know, they've been hearing about that if they are going to use drug paraphernalia and pass them, you know, Minneapolis now in that area is starting to set up centers where they give them bottles of bleach. Mm-hmm. They can come there, and they said, well, they know they don't reach a lot of them because, oh, who cares, you know. But there are some of these people that will come, mm-hmm. and they will take those. Mm-hmm. And this thing, too, was in the Minneapolis, mm-hmm. St.
Paul. And there are people who object to the distribution of bleach,
yes.
or the distribution of clean needles,
mm-hmm.
on the grounds that you are helping. So.
Mm-hmm.
Or the distribution of condoms.
Condoms.
Or the distribution, mm-hmm. of condoms, you bet.
I was just going to say, in Tacoma, a gentleman set up a place to distribute needles and was immediately told that it was illegal, and he said he was going to do it anyway. But I think that serves two purposes. It cuts down on the transmission of AIDS, and it also gets the dirty, broken needles off the public grounds.
Okay,
I don't know how aware this group is. There's another drug that's ahead of.
It is time to go. So if you need to go, feel free to leave. And if you want to stay, feel free to stay.
A crack is called ice. Mm-hmm. It's an amphetamine base which can be manufactured very easy, very addictive, and really the worst thing we've gotten yet. And I presume that's an IV thing too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think one of the other problems, the reason we didn't get involved right away, is we kind of thought maybe it would take care of itself because those people really deserved it if they were going to live that kind of a lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And so we wouldn't worry too much about them.
Okay. I think there's a lot of that still around, in the terms of deserving it.
That's and pretty judgmental.
The saddest part is that many people with AIDS believe that. They believe they deserve what they got. They will tell you, I deserve this, I should not have done so and so. And again, there's a difference now. We need to, as a church, look at how do we help people. There's a difference between confessing sin and walking around being the victim who deserves to be punished. After all, don't we all deserve punishment?
Mm-hmm.
We need then to remember and rely on the grace of God. If the grace of God is there for us, and it is most certainly there for these people also.